We're your hosts, Dana and Kara,
and this is From the Mouths of Babes.
Welcome back, babes. We're super excited to have you join us on this week's episode. And this week, we're excited to welcome Dan Purcell, who is a sexpert, a Christian sexpert, and loves to talk about how couples can improve intimacy in marriage. He and his wife have a great story about how they changed their views of sex to a positive frame, doing the hard work to overcome anxieties around sex, and how lovemaking can be fun, playful, and a dash of bedroom novelty benefits marriages for the long haul. Dan and his wife, Emily, co-founded Get Your Marriage On and developed the Intimately Us app. Together, they strive to help others improve intimacy within marriage. Dan started the Get Your Marriage On podcast after questions came flooding in from couples on how to better their sex lives. Dan has also authored 4 different apps designed for strengthening marriages. He has put on live events centered on intimacy within marriage that have been attended by over thousands of people. He and his wife, Emily, have been married for nearly 18 years, and they have 6 children. Dan, we're so excited to have you.
Thank you. Wow. Well,
I am mostly just excited and intrigued to hear your story. You, your wife, Emily, and you, I've heard, have a great story of how this topic really transformed your own life, and specifically around how a bedroom game changed your marriage.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's jump in. And if you don't mind sharing with us the backstory of how this all started.
Oh, sure. So my wife and I, we met in middle school. We were friends in middle school and high school. We didn't date seriously, like we did some of the dance dates together, but it was, and we went to different universities. But one summer between our sophomore and junior year, we both came home for the summer. And we reconnected and sparks flew and we got married, and we both come from pretty good families. And, but sex was never talked about a lot. And if it was talked about, it was usually like, you know, it was all the thou shalt not side of the conversation. So going into marriage, we both had a pretty limited understanding of what sex can be. It wasn't bad, but, it was enough that we could have children and have, you know, have a fairly good life, but we couldn't even like felt even right saying the word sex out loud to each other. It always felt like a little like taboo, even within our marriage. And at least at first. And then I had tons of questions. I remember shortly after being married, I had all these questions about my own sexuality and this new experience. And I went to the library at my university, and I like found a book on human sexuality. I like looked left, looked right, made sure no one was watching me in this section of the library. I was so embarrassed. I pulled it off the bookshelf. I went and checked it out. I didn't even make eye contact with the lady, you know, scanning my book. And I go home, I put it in my backpack, I go home, and I open up somewhere in the middle, and there was an illustrated drawing of two people having sex, and I immediately shut the book like, I can't have this, like, what is this? And I didn't even look at the rest of the book, and I was so embarrassed about the topic of sex. And my wife also, so all of this changed when we were about 13 years into our marriage. So we've had a pretty good marriage, and it all changed because I had a conversation with a friend, and this friend really opened up to me about his sex life, which really caught me off guard because, you know, it's kind of a taboo topic. You don't talk about this all the time.
Sure.
But his story was, he was talking about how in his marriage, his wife said, "Hey, you need to take care of me better," essentially. And his guard was way up at first. So like, what? I'm not good enough for you? Or like I'm not satisfying you in bed. Is that what you're saying? So he kind of like, anyway, they persisted and they started to find some helpful resources and some things that really helped them sexually. And all of a sudden she's, you know, getting taken care of better in bed, and their sex life is a lot better. He's a lot feeling better and more confident as a husband because his wife is happier and satisfied more sexually, and all other areas of their marriage are starting to improve. So he's telling me these things, and I'm like blushing the whole conversation. Like, I can't believe someone's telling me about these things.
Love it.
And I go home that night, but now I'm really self-conscious. He was really sincere. That's the thing. He wasn't just trying to like be macho or anything. He's right. like trying to tell me like something, this is really good for marriages and we don't talk about it enough. And so I go home that night and it's like, hey, Emily, you'll never guess what kind of conversation I had today. But I was now self-conscious, like maybe my wife isn't satisfied in bed. Maybe I'm not a good enough lover. Like all of those questions are now in my head. Like, so for the first time we had like really deep conversations about our own sex life. And some of the things came up, like in my conversation with a friend about other sexual behaviors other than intercourse that in my mind were always kind of taboo, but for them, they're like regular. And it's like first time like talking to someone just out loud about these things. And like, what do you think about this? What are your thoughts on that? Are you interested in trying anything else other than our regular or you know, those kinds of conversations for the first right. time in our marriage? And then in the end, we both concluded there's a lot more to this we need to know. So being the nerds that we are, we started looking for like information online very carefully because we were so afraid what to type in and what search results yeah. we'd get. sure. But we're like, we'll do this together and it'll be okay. And we found some really helpful books. One of the first books we read was called The Good Girl's Guide to Great Sex by Sheila Ray Gregor. And I think I binge read that whole book in one night, like cover to cover. It was wow. what I think loved about it. She's a Christian author. So she's writing from a Christian perspective, which we appreciated because they're in line with our values.
Sure.
And unapologetically says how wonderful and amazing sex is and can be, and gets into detail about different aspects of creating a great sexual relationship. And just the underlying tone of the whole thing was really positive. And then we read another book called Knowing Her Intimately by Laura Brotherson, and less on the Christian perspective, but really more on the kind of on female sexual wiring, more a clinical point of view. Yet the undertone of everything is how positive and wonderful things can be. And then we were hooked. We like read 12 books in the next 12 months. We found podcasts that were like, hey, there's a whole world out there that's very positive and also in line with our values about sexuality. And then our own marriage just started taking off. We started, you know, trying new things, doing new things. But one of the things that really helped us the most, I got to admit, is like, there's a website called The Dating Divas. They put together date night ideas. It's like a blog for married couples to keep dating throughout their marriage. Okay. And they have a few other date ideas are like bedroom intimacy date ideas. And that was like totally like my thing. I'm like, I can totally do these things. So I download them, print them out, cut them out, prepare these elaborate dates. And of course I'd prefer the more intimate dates ideas. But anyway, we'd prepare these things 1 year for like, we did 14 days of Valentine's Day leading up to Valentine's Day with a different like little bedroom game every night leading up to things. Just because we totally started to really enjoy like, when we approach sex as more as something playful and fun and something where you're both like relax at, and there's no real goal other than to just enjoy time together. And when you're in a playful mood, you're also willing to like try new things. And if you sure. fail, it's no big deal because, hey, you're just playing a game. You're just having fun. And so we're kind of like kids again, enjoying each other in a whole new level. But the greatest thing that we felt right away is our own relationship really sort of took off. Like if we can talk about sex, we can probably talk about anything. So
yeah.
our level of communication just really improved, but not just that, the bond that we felt between us really, really got stronger. And like, you know, the promises, vows, and covenants that we've made with each other when we were married, those became more real and tangible to me.
Hmm.
We also like, even our kids started to notice because there's a little more harmony in the home and my work life improved. I'm getting more done at work. I'm more motivated to like tackle life and make a difference in the world. And she's benefiting a lot too. So like, there's something to this. There's a lot to this. We gotta do something about this to like share this message with others.
Yeah.
And my background's in software development, and that's like the only world I really know. So I'm like, no, we're going to make an app. We're going to make a bedroom game app for this. But first I looked on the app store and there's tons of bedroom games already in the app store, but they're all kind of crass and raunchy. It's mm-hmm. like, they're all muscling for first place. Who can like, cause there's a fine line. The Apple App Store won't list something that's overtly pornographic. but they really like to push that limit. And there's a lot of that stuff out there that, you know, I'd be uncomfortable having something like that on my phone.
Yeah. Sure. I want something fun, but not kinky and like borderline illegal. Like,
Right. Exactly. Not lame.
Yeah.
You can't be lame. So we put all our creative ideas put together and we threw together this app called Intimately Us, and it's really taken off because it's not crass, it's not raunchy, and it's not lame. Anyway, we put a lot of helpful things into it and we're continually improving, adding more to it. And it's kind of become kind of like our own like couples research project, kind of sharing with the world. So that's what's come out of it.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome.
As you're talking, I'm just realizing like you created this whole new hobby, like in the research, and it was like this thing that you did together. Who knew that like your next big hobby was sex? Like,
I know, right? If you had told me like even weeks before this whole thing happened, I would have thought you were from another planet because that was just so not me.
Yeah. I love that. Growing together, creating a passion together. It's something, I mean, it's not silly, but it is something that's like, but it is like your newfound passion is bringing the passion back into the bedroom. I love it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. I mean, one of my questions, and I'm sure a lot of people that are listening to this are thinking the same thing, but one, how many kids did you have at this point? And when this all, you mentioned this a little bit, but your kids started to know the difference. But I think sometimes when people have kids, they are worried about making love, making fun and playful and intimate because you've got little ears and little feet walking around. So I'm curious, how many kids did you have at this point when you guys made this shift, and how has that impacted your children now?
Gotcha. We Emily was pregnant with our sixth at the time all this was happening. And I think it was a perfect storm of good events because I think more than any other time in our marriage, we're a little more mature.
Sure.
And just career-wise, a little more financially stable, that it's not like a worry on my mind all the time. I have like more mental space for like family and relationships. That was also a helpful thing. And also our oldest was 12 and old and responsible enough. He could watch the kids so we can get away on a date night. And that was like a whole new world open when we can like get away regularly. Like we can count on time together once a week. But also Emily doesn't mind me sharing this, but when she's pregnant, she has a higher libido. I know some women have a lower libido during pregnancy. She has a higher libido. So that was for our both mutual benefit too. So it's like this perfect intersection of a lot of things. We started locking the bedroom door at night, like, you know, and just starting setting a little better boundaries at the time. Then youngest was sleeping through the night. So like logistically, it was like, for us, it was like the perfect, like the stars seemed to align in that time.
Yeah, that's good. So I think in your situation, you know, maybe you didn't realize until after having this conversation with a friend that there was a need for change, or maybe that there was a need for your sex life to get spruced up. So in your opinion, what are indications that someone else's sex life could use some sprucing up?
Oh, wow. There's a lot. It's funny you say that because I'm sure I'm not the only one that does this. Like even walking down like at the grocery store, seeing couples shop together, you kind of think like, what's life like together for them? And just by the way that you see them interacting, or people at church or others, you know, social places, like affection, I think is a big one. Like, are they holding hands, or are they like, can they tolerate eye contact with one another? That's a big deal. Because when you're not very happy with another person, or if you have something you're trying to hide or something you don't want to be seen about yourself, it's really hard to have like, you know, nice eye contact with someone else. So that's something I can recognize too in another couple, or that I see.
Fascinating. It's true. I think we all do it. We all are like secretly just like curious about.
I know we are.
What's going on in their life?
And I think that's normal about being human, but because we like to learn from each other. And I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what I appreciate about your story too, is just I mean, I would say my husband and I are not like, we're not like crass and open about our sex life, but we have a really great group of friends, and some of them are married, some of them are not. And especially for the ones that are getting into those places where they're getting ready for marriage, I feel like it's important to have people that are willing to have those conversations, because they may not have grown up in homes where it's been an open conversation. And so I feel like that's really valuable in friendships, and it might be vulnerable, but again, I think it makes our relationships a lot stronger and better when we're able to have these conversations.
Yeah, definitely.
I also really like that you bring kind of shed light on like good boy syndrome too, because even in most Christian communities, where you're common with good girl syndrome, because, you know, perfect, good little pure girls. And but boys should just know they're, you know, they're sexual beings, they just should know, and they shouldn't have shame around it, because, you know, so I just really value bringing to light that, like, yeah, a lot of men don't have a healthy foundation of sexuality at all. So we're all kind of figuring out as we go, and there's no shame in being and talking about it with safe people in safe places, with respectfully.
Yeah. Or we hope there's no shame in that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I agree. There is definitely a good boy syndrome just as much as there's a good girl syndrome.
Yeah. Okay. So what are some of your creative ideas to make lovemaking fun, playful, and most importantly, intimate?
Thank you. I think anything you can turn into a game for me makes things playful. And there's a lot of ideas there, and it's really up for you. And you and your spouse can really brainstorm on this together. Some of the fun things I've heard couples do that help is they create a sexy bucket list together. They'll, you know, make a list of all the fun things they want to do sexually. It might be like, I don't know, like, of course you want to make sure they're legal and it's private and all that. But, some things I've heard others say are like, we want to have sex in a cave, you know, sometime. We want to, under the stars, or we want to try to go 7 days in a row, or we want to, whatever it might be, they'll come up mm-hmm. with this sexy bucket list. And then when you start planning like a romantic getaway together once in a while, you can look down your list and try to plan your little getaways around one of your bucket list items you want to check off your list.
Love that.
Getting in the mood is always it's that transition time from, you know, mommy mode to hot mama mode, or like, you know, work brain to like letting go, disconnect to like being fully present mode. There's a lot of fun things you can do there. There's always touch. There's always, as far as games go, one of the fun ones is sock wrestling. You each only wear one sock and you try to get the other person's sock off before they take your sock off. And you can set different rules around that if you want to. If you like want something a little more active, you can always like get a beach ball and play beach ball, bedroom beach ball, where you're standing on opposite sides of the bed. And you can make certain rules. Like if you miss the ball, then you have to remove an item of clothing or whatever. And as far as stripping games, there's a lot of variety there. You can take pretty much any card game or board game and turn it into a stripping game. Like Skip Bo is a family favorite of ours that we have our own private version of. Even like getting out the old like Twister game, or just anything fun like that, you can really turn into a bedroom game.
That's awesome. Yep. But again, that seems like one loud, it could get a little rowdy. So like if you've got teenagers, I mean, what are you suggesting here for people, like that you should just save all this stuff for when you have like a out of town vacation and you're childless? You know, like I'm all about doing these fun things, but for people who are in the middle of child rearing, how is that?
What are the logistics? Yeah.
Gotcha.
What are the
logistics? Is your master bedroom like adjacent to the kids' bedroom, or are they separated in your home?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So good point. So you might want to do something a little more quiet or wait for the hotel room to do some of these things.
Some sound blocking machines in their rooms. They're, you know, they're good time. Night music is turned up a little louder.
Or if your closet is a little more separated, like it's a little further from the house, make something work in the closet. But you'd ask also what to make it intimate. And I think when couples have sex, it's usually there's like it's like split into like four phases. You have the initiation phase, like someone's got to start it in your marriage.
Right.
If and it doesn't matter really who, because if nobody starts, nothing's going to happen. So someone has to start it. So that's like the first phase and how you initiate. And then the next phase is it's like how you're negotiating the amount of intimacy you're going to have in that marriage. And that's usually the person who initiates is like saying how much I want to be with you. Like, I want to connect with you. I want to have some pleasure with you. I want to have some fun with you. Like, and most couples like skip over that and rush through that. And to the point where you get through the work phase, because sex is, there's like a play time. And then all of a sudden, and then there's time where it's work. Now you're like busy working instead of playing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What I mean? And then you work. And then most couples, they reach some sort of a goal. And then the fourth phase is that like afterglow. It's that coming back to normal phase. So I think the key is the first few phases, getting initiation done right. Or negotiating that well, and then really extending that foreplay time. I would love if couples looked at foreplay more as a main event rather than the work phase. And to the point you can barely not tolerate it anymore. You need that. You're so close. You need just a little more push to go over the edge into the work phase. Like really focus on that play phase. And that's when sex, I think, is the most intimate. Some of the things we've tried, and it's in our app too, is like just some fun exercises you can try. And these are like exercises a lot of therapists recommend to their patients, like is eye gazing and just taking time to really soak in the other person. And these don't have to be loud, you know, rambunctious activities. These are more the quiet ones where can you like look into each other's eyes for a few minutes and just really appreciate the person in front of you and who they are. And this wonderful being that's married to you and all the growth that they've been through and what it's like and how this life you've been able to build together. If you can like kind of get in that frame, I think it makes sex very intimate. And then you can add touch to that too. And it doesn't have to be like sexual touch. It can just be like, you know, caressing the hair, the cheek, the arms, the stomach, the back, the legs, just really like expressing through your touch. Because there's a difference. If you want to try this at home, try this experiment where one's the giver, one's the receiver. And the receiver's job is to try to map or like sense what the giver is thinking at the time. And the giver's job is to touch. And your first time you're going to touch with all the gratitude, all the love that you can muster through your touch. And then you can set a timer if you want. When it beeps, you're going to do the exact same touch again. The second time, you're going to think about sports stats. You're going to think about what you have to do tomorrow. You have to think about like your grocery shopping. You're going to go through the same motions. And the receiver is going to see if they can tell a difference. And most of the time you can. There's something amazing you like communicated through that touch and through that power of touch. So now you take that to a sexual level. Imagine sex where all the sexual touch and the sexual connection is filled with this, you know, deep gratitude and this cherishing and this adoration of this person in front of you, person you're with, and really being present and in the moment. That level of sexual connection is going to be far greater than the, you know, I'm in work mode. I got to rub here a little longer. I've got to touch there for a few more minutes. And then get over that edge so we can be done mode. It's a completely different experience.
Yeah.
I totally value what you're saying. Like more recently, like a goal my husband and I have is just to do like holding at some point during the day. just to like slow down, be super present and mindful with each other. And, you know, we can't talk about anything like real stressful, like nothing important is supposed to be talked about. We're just supposed to be hanging out and be like, how's your day? What's up? What are you doing? Like, and we really just realized it kind of was a chore. It was kind of on the list of like, okay, we're going to do this. And sometimes it was like, okay, well, we're going to do this first and then you can go do a workout or whatever. And we've just come to really value that time together just to be without the distraction of the TV. You know, there can't be distractors going on. Like phones need to be off. And it's really allowed us to like, I guess, drop some emotional walls and just be seen and see. And so I think that's really, really great that you push the connection before.
Yeah. And I love that you brought that up, like taking down the walls.
Yeah.
And being seen. So to me, that's what at the heart of intimacy is. It's like a willingness to be seen and a willing to see and to know that other person who's in front of you. I don't think sex gets any better than that. That's like the pinnacle, the best type of sexual relationship and encounters you can have is when it's full of that rich and deep meaning mm-hmm. because you're very present with each other.
Yeah. I think oftentimes you mentioned this earlier, the hardest phase for people is that initiation. Sometimes it's the most vulnerable.
Oh yeah.
It's that knowing and being seen, and it's everything's coming down right there when you're initiating. And so I love that being able to slow down through that phase helps it to be, I don't know, more fulfilling. But I think sometimes what gets in the way of initiation is desire.
Yes.
Some couples will struggle with desire. We just get into the daily grind that sex can become more of a chore or a checklist item. So how would you suggest that couples make that transition from just a checkbox of I want sex, I need sex, I know it's a good thing in my marriage, to I want you and I want you as my spouse?
Yeah. I think first thing to talk about though is just desire in general.
Yeah.
In any marriage, it's like a law of the universe. You're going to have a higher desire spouse and a lower desire spouse. Mm-hmm. And that's not just for sexual matters, it's for anything. One spouse is going to care a lot more about the spending than the other. One spouse is going to care a lot more about cleanliness than the other, or about parenting or recreation. Everything.
That's interesting. I've never thought about it that way. That that's going to be the case with every situation. Interesting.
Yeah. And sex is one of those. So you'll always have that. And lower desire spouse does not mean low desire spouse. It's just relative. Just mm-hmm. like you and your husband, one might be taller than the other, but you could have married a different person where you're taller than your husband, or the other way around. So it's just all relative. Like you could be in a marriage where like once a week is way too low for one spouse, yet in a different context, once a week is way too much for a different spouse. So,
sure.
So it's all relative. So and the second law of the universe is the lower desire spouse will always control the amount of sex that the couple is having. Because you won't move any faster than the lower desire spouse.
Right.
And that's not a bad thing. That's just something I think a lot of men who are the higher desire spouse, like they get frustrated because they're like, my wife doesn't initiate. She doesn't want me. And when that's the husband speaking, who is the higher desire spouse, not realizing that she's just the lower desire spouse and she's just going to control the amount of sex you're going to have in your marriage. So understand that those are like laws of the universe. Those are fixed. Those just aren't going to change, but how can you work within that? So if you want to cultivate more desire, if you're like the lower desire spouse and want to experience more desire, there's a few things to understand is just as we like take in food and we metabolize it in our bodies, and some people can metabolize certain foods faster and better than others just because bodies are different. We also take in sexual cues and we metabolize those into desire differently. So like for me, seeing my wife coming out of the shower, that to me is a great cue. I metabolize that very quickly into sexual desire. But when I step out of the shower, gosh darn it, it doesn't give my wife the same effect. She doesn't take that as a cue. She doesn't metabolize that into sexual desire that fast, right? She needs different types of cues, and maybe more cues over time for that to happen. So research has shown there's really two. There's like people that experience sexual desire where it feels more spontaneous. It comes easy to them. They metabolize those cues quickly, or they're thinking it's really easy for them to think about sex and desire it. Those are the they call that spontaneous desire. And that's like what you see depicted in Hollywood. That's like it's always ready, always on tap, always ready to go. But the reality is most people experience the opposite, which is more responsive desire. And in the studies have shown more women exhibit responsive desire than men, generally speaking, when they do surveys. So for a responsive, which is just as legitimate and just as correct and just as good, there's nothing wrong with responsive. It's great. It's that you don't walk around all the time just thinking about sex. You don't like at the drop of a hat feel that desire, but instead you need something else to kind of get your engines going first, and then desire comes later. When I was young, I did martial arts, and we'd go to this seminar once. I guess I got pretty good, so they invited me to some seminar that was, you know, quite a drive away, like a 45-minute drive away once a week. And as a kid, I always remember feeling really nervous, and I didn't want to go. Every time, got a knot in my stomach. I was nervous. I was one of the littlest kids in the whole room full of adults doing karate. But once I was there and once I was doing it, I had a great time. And every time it's like, I'm so happy I went.
Right.
And I think like exercise, like anyone who's ever done running or decided to go to the gym, it's like the same thing. It's like, I don't want to go, but you get up, but you get going. And then once you're there, you're like, so happy you did it. So for the responsive desire, it's more like that. It's, you're going to need some more external cues to get you going. And there it's like backwards. The arousal has to start first, and then desire will show up. Mm-hmm. instead of the other way around for spontaneous, where the desire starts and then the arousal will come second. So do more things that be more open to receiving more cues, and decide to like want it. And then usually the arousal desire will follow the arousal. So that's how you can get more desire in your life.
Loving those analogies, I think it just helps people to conceptualize it a little bit better.
And I think that most women, especially if they're like have babies or like they really resonate with that, like, oh, I'm glad I did it now, but like the thinking about like, oh, I probably have to take a shower, like
the logistics,
that's gonna be like a lot of work. Yeah,
it is a lot of work. And for most women, it takes them longer to reach orgasm than men do, like on average 25 minutes compared to 6 minutes. So it means more effort if you really want to have a pleasurable experience on average. So you know, no wonder why that's, you have perfectly legitimate reasons. So a lot of men who the heart is our spouse usually think it's either sex or not sex. It's like black or white, on or off. Not realize, because in their mind, it's just one step from no sex to sex. It's like, what's the big deal? It's just the next step up. They need to realize there's several steps in between to get to that level. So the question should not be, do you want to have sex right now? The question should be instead, what can I do for you that would be pleasurable for you right now? And just frame it as something pleasurable, because it might be, you know, I'd really like for you just to hold me right now. Or can we have just a makeout session? Or can you give me a back scratch or maybe even a back massage? And make that the expectation. Like, it doesn't have to lead to anything. So it's about coming into this like in-between space, this maybe space. Don't try to get to a yes or a no, but live in the maybe. And most of the time, the maybe will move to a yes. Sometimes it'll move to a no. And if it moves to a no, don't pout, don't get upset, because that just ruins it for the next time. Just embrace and love living in the maybe space.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a listener reach out to me today, and because we released a female sexuality episode, and she is also a pilot wife, and her husband is gone a whole lot more than mine has. And she was asking, like, in the frames of a traveling spouse, how do you connect sexually or intimately when you're apart so much? And, but also her husband struggles with a sex addiction and pornography. Mm-hmm. So she's like, I'm not super comfortable bringing in technology because I don't want to feel like another woman, or I don't want to be doing something for myself. Like and it was a really complex situation. I was like, I don't really have an answer for you, but I'm going to totally ask.
That sounds really complex. Wow.
Yeah.
My answer would be a lot more straightforward if it wasn't for the unwanted pornography use.
Yeah. Part. So maybe let's maybe two answers. One for someone who's not struggling with any unwanted sexual behaviors, plus maybe someone who is struggling with that.
Okay. So I would think, first of all, for some men who are the higher desire spouse, sexual desire sometimes shows up like almost like a physical need, like a desire to release some sexual tension. Do you know of people who are like, they can go without eating, and you have to remind them, oh yeah, I need to eat.
Yeah.
Right.
And other people like, I don't need to remind me to eat. I'm always hungry, and they're going to eat. So for a lot of men, it's more like, I'm always hungry. It's like that side of the coin. And then for others, like for people who aren't used to, or can't really relate to that, you got to think about people who are like, they need to be reminded, oh yeah, you need to eat once in a while. Like, oh yeah, I need to eat. So there is that like desire for some release, and that release doesn't have to be sexy, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's just like a relieving a type of tension. So you can like calm down and like breathe again. And like, you don't have to be some ogre and always irate all the time, like irritated. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's just a nice release. So this is totally up for you as a couple. And I highly encourage every couple to work out together as an intimate team what's going to work for both of you. And what's going to work for you is going to work for a different couple. But really get to the point where you can have a good heart-to-heart conversation. And like, it's going to feel really vulnerable, really embarrassed sometimes, especially at first, when you're like going to open up and say, this is how I'm feeling. This is kind of what I'm thinking about doing. And like, you got to be really gentle and kind about those things. And don't flip out if those conversations go badly at first, because you got to kind of grow into it and learn about it. So the conversation might go like, let's assume he's the higher desire spouse, because we're so stereotypical here, but it could totally go the other way. And that's normal too. I'm not saying one's more normal than the other, but let's just say he's the pilot. He's the higher desire spouse. He's away and he wants to connect with his wife sexually because they're gone. So that might look like phone calls, you know, can we get on a video call together? Really up to that couple. But he might say things like, what do you think about just talking sexually with me? Or are you okay if I incorporate some, you know, self-touch while we're together? Or whatever that might look like. Because again, I think the end goal of a good sexual relationship is connection and pleasure. You want to be really connected. Use your sexuality to drive you to closer together and not further apart. And then to connect at a really deep and fundamental level. So if that's your criteria, then see what ways you can work out while you're apart to make that kind of be a mutual thing.
Yeah.
One thing we talk about a lot is like, we need to emotionally connect in order to feel connected sexually. Mm-hmm. And that's true, but just as valid is the other way around. Mm-hmm. We need to feel sexually connected first so we can connect emotionally too. And just both are valid. And to make room in your marriage so that there's room for two people in your marriage and that you can both kind of work out something that works for the both of you. Now, depending on your values and what you believe is right, as far as like in this example, self-touching or not, all those need to factor in and you need to work it out together and recognize people have boundaries and what they're comfortable with and not comfortable with. And a sex life is usually made up of, he has all the things he's comfortable with and not comfortable with. She has all the things she's comfortable with and not comfortable with. And you're left over with just the overlap of what the two are comfortable with. So it's like you're both left with the leftovers. So recognize that too, and just work within what you're both comfortable with for that.
Yeah. And I think just starting to talk about it can something that felt taboo because, your father-in-law told you on your wedding night that that's not good. Like you shouldn't do that. You know, some things aren't necessarily true for your relationship. They're based off of somebody else's opinion or a cultural norm. Opening up that communication can make you feel more comfortable because maybe you haven't even allowed yourself to discuss that option, you know, as an option for yourselves.
Right. Which on a previous episode that we just did with Dr. Finlayson Fife, we kind of talk about that a lot of the times our backgrounds, cultural beliefs, religious beliefs come into effect when we're deciding what our boundaries are, especially within the framework of sexuality. And so I know something that you talk a lot about on your podcast and on your blog is the difference between horizontal and vertical novelty, and how I think in general, we as humans, we want new things, we want new clothes. And so I think it's important that for couples who are listening, that they know that having curiosity and wanting novelty in your sex life is perfectly okay. But I think something that I know a lot of people are probably asking themselves is there are going to be a lot of questions. There might be some discomfort with incorporating novelty into their sex life. Mm-hmm. So how would you suggest that couples who are navigating that and there is discomfort, maybe to incorporate toys, maybe the woman would like to incorporate more toys. How do you navigate maybe discomfort versus like a firm boundary? Does that make sense? Because I think kind of what we're talking about here is that we might just not know what works for us because we've just done the same thing all the time.
Uh-huh.
So how do you navigate the discomfort when there maybe is a willingness to try something new?
So like let's say that scenario, she wants to use a vibrator and he's uncomfortable with the idea because he might think it replaces him or something like that.
Yeah.
I think a few things to think about there. I would tell them, recognizing, I think one of the things that we get hung up on a lot is we think sex or like, we believe like we need to take care of our own health, right? Take care of our own sleep. Like we understand that's my responsibility, making sure I'm exercising, making sure like, but when it comes to our sexuality, we don't think about it as ours. It's like this amorphous entity outside of us that belongs in our marriage instead of something that's mine. But once you kind of understand that my sexuality belongs to me, and therefore I'm a steward over my sexuality, it kind of flips a switch in your mind to think that, yeah, it's really my responsibility to take good care of my sexuality and to use it in good ways. That's going to, you know, make my life great.
So
once you think about it, things that way, it kind of changes. Like if both people can adopt that view, then the conversation in that situation might be a little different. Like she might say, I think a vibrator would be really fun and really sexy, and I want to add this to our repertoire. Like, I want to try this. And people have hangups for all different kinds of reasons. And some reasons are completely logical and others on the surface seem really illogical.
Sure.
But most of the times people have a reason, whether it's conscious or unconscious, that makes sense in their own mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people need to do two things with anything regarding like something new or something that might be like a vibrator or different sexual behaviors or whatever. Mm-hmm. You got to really think about like, am I saying no because I've just always said no to this? Because there's like some real moral reason why? Or am I just saying no because I'm just uncomfortable with the idea? Because if you're just uncomfortable with the idea, then you need to challenge yourself there, because the whole, you'll never get rid of bedroom boredom. You'll never get rid of, like, this is not just about bedroom. This is anything in life. You'll never grow until you step outside your comfort zone. Right. Like even recording your first podcast, that was probably really scary. You stepped outside your comfort zone to like do this, right?
Yeah.
Or people that accomplish anything great, the very first time it was scary. Sexuality and, you know, growing and developing your sexuality, like you want to grow and develop spiritually or intellectually, will always require some risk and some stepping outside your comfort zone. You can create safe boundaries as a couple, like agree, for instance, we won't go have sex with people outside of our marriage. We'll keep our sexuality within our marriage. We won't like look at pornographic material, for instance. You can like set boundaries like that. What are your absolute hard no's? But within that, there's going to be a lot of stuff that you need to tolerate for growth's sake. Mm-hmm. I would say to the man specifically in this case, that understanding female anatomy helps understand the value of a vibrator in a relationship a whole lot better. Because for a lot of men, we grew up thinking men have a penis and women have a vagina, which is absolutely true. Yeah. They definitely have a vagina, but they think
but that's
that,
it.
Yes. But they think that's their sexual center. Because during, you know, intercourse, it feels great to the man. And therefore they think automatically, well, if this feels good to me, and that's like her equivalent of what I have, that obviously must feel great to her. Right. And for most women, the studies are, you know, vary, but like 15 to 30% of women can experience a lot of pleasure from intercourse, like reaching orgasm from intercourse. But the rest, the far majority of the rest, can't reach orgasm just from intercourse alone. They need other types of stimulation.
Right.
Because her sexual pleasure center is not the vagina, it's the clitoris.
Right.
So once he understands that and gets that, and like a lot of men value intercourse so highly as that's in their mind, the definition of sex. Like
right.
We haven't had sex unless, you know, we had intercourse. But the reality is that's just one way to get there. There's many other ways to enjoy a great sexual experience that don't have to involve intercourse. Yeah. So understanding her anatomy better and understanding that's her sexual center, and that part of a woman's body responds very well to vibration, which to him, he doesn't respond as well to like the same vibrator applied to himself isn't going to create the same sensations in his body as it's going to for her.
Right.
So a lot of men like discount that. But once you understand that, oh, this is something that kind of helps her get there. Mm-hmm. Then, and if your goal is to have, you know, something you both enjoy, something that's pleasurable and connecting, then you can do that. There's vibrators that they've invented that are great for men and women that are worn during intercourse, for instance.
Yeah.
And there's even sex toys for men available. And I don't know. And also to kind of taking a more playful approach and, you know, if I think all those things are going to help a couple work through those situations.
Just seeing it as fun for us. And
yes, it's play.
It's not a threat on you at all.
And the reality is like some women are afraid to use a sex toy because they think this, I'm going to depend on this and not want him anymore. And I'm sure once in a while there is such a case like that. But remember, your goal is connection and pleasure. And you're not going to feel ever any sense of like loving a bond from a silicone toy. It's you only get that from another human, right? You might experience a physical sensation, and you can actually like orgasm in a way is no different than a reflex, like someone tapping your knee and your leg kicks out, right?
Yeah.
You stimulate the right way and your body has a reflex. But what makes orgasm during like coupled sex so different is you're with this other person, you're vulnerable with them, you're connecting with them.
Yeah.
And no sense of like stimuli, you know, external stimuli can replace that human to human, skin to skin, that warmth on warmth the eye to eye intimacy.
Yeah. The oxytocin and other endorphins yes. released is not going to make you attached to an inanimate object.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Yep. And some studies show that the amount of those hormones released is like prolactin is one of the hormones released in men mm-hmm. after orgasm. And that helps with the getting things back to a normal state mm-hmm. after the peak of orgasm. They don't know why, but there's four times more prolactin released during coupled sex than there is in solo, like just through masturbation alone. So even your brain can tell a difference between coupled sex and solo sex.
That's really interesting. So you could still be like agitated and like up, like you're not coming down. And so I thought that.
Or the fulfillment's not going to be.
Yeah, the fulfillment's not there. Okay. That's really, really interesting.
Now, some people do turn to solo sex because they can't tolerate the intimacy of coupled sex. Yeah, right. That gets back to part two of your question earlier about the husband with the past of pornography use.
Yeah.
People actually, it's a lot. I know this sounds so bad to say, but it's cheaper and easier to have sex with yourself than with another person. Because when I'm with another person, I have to be me. I have to be with that person. Mm-hmm. I have to, you know, some people have a really hard time receiving, like letting you like touch me and give me pleasure. Some people have mm-hmm. a hard time giving.
Right.
Some people have a hard time like wanting, like liking their spouse and like mm-hmm. wanting to be with them. So mm-hmm. you can still quote unquote get off
right
alone without, because you don't want to face intimacy
right.
and that's there's, not
yeah
so the crux of the problem usually is you gotta like move towards intimacy. And for mm-hmm. a lot of men that I know who have habitual pornography use, it's a coping mechanism to deal with stress is how it kind of starts mm-hmm. and it's a very effective coping mechanism. It works great.
Yeah.
Problem is, you don't solve the source of the problem. It's like a Band-Aid. Right. And oftentimes you feel really guilty and horrible after.
Yeah.
Which shame. Makes you feel worse. So it's this perpetual cycle that feeds itself over and over.
Yeah.
So it's akin to, I don't know, someone said it's like we all have our escape, right? Some might be food, some might be binging Netflix. Like mm-hmm. you don't want to deal with a certain emotion, so you're gonna mask it with something else. And some men turn to pornography, or and women too. 30% of pornography users are women. So they'll turn to some that as a way of coping. So developing better coping skills to deal with the stresses and anxieties of life is usually key to helping most men overcome that unwanted use. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I think that's a good little plug.
Yeah. And that's my next app, by the way.
Yeah. Awesome. Out. Well, we will definitely, we've done one like pornography and sex addiction episode that has people have really resonated with. And so I think that any resources that help people navigate that and finding that deep why, or, you know, the motivator there.
Yeah.
And cope, I think is always a worthy or worthwhile
endeavor.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, I think we could keep talking about this for hours. It's been so fascinating and really helpful, and I know that it will be really helpful for our listeners, but specifically for our listeners who are like, okay, I want to jump more into this, I want to get curious, then we have some great resources for you. So we will make sure that we tag and list in our show notes all of the different information on the different apps that you provide. But before we end and before we share all of that information, let's transition to everyone's favorite portion of the segment. This came out of the mouth of my babe. Kara, do you have a story?
All right. So on the 4th of July, we like went across the street. And there was like a little neighborhood thing and a bunch of bouncy houses and food trucks. And my husband turns to our 5-year-old actually. And he goes, hey, how about after this, we go get a giant corn dog? And he goes, ah! You just read my mind. But he didn't even know there were giant corn dogs there, but his mind was being read. That was a good one.
I love that. Dan, you've got 6 kids, so I'm sure you've got a babe wife, so I'm sure you've got some funny stories.
So our second child, when she was little, had this hat. It's like a winter hat,
beanie.
Like warm. Yeah, like a beanie with long pigtail things down the side. And she'd wear it constantly all year long. Like, and we live in a very hot place where the summer is really hot. So
yeah,
she'd wear it all the time. And that was her hair. And we'd like hide it and almost get rid of it. And she'd always find it and put it on. That was really funny. And then the daughter under that, she learned that she was 3¾ old. Like, she's almost turning 4. And my oldest was 11 at the time. Says, if I'm 3¾, does that make you 11¼? That was kind of funny too.
That is cute. Oh, I love little kids' brains. They're just so funny.
So Sawyer was going to bed. She was sitting in between my legs, and we had just finished reading and singing and saying prayers. And I said, can I have a kiss? And she kind of just like turns her head to the side and just like smacks her lips together. And then keeps reading. So like, she didn't even like turn all the way to like give me a kiss. It was kind of like, fine. And then she turns back and just keeps reading her book.
Sassy air kiss. Oh my. Yeah.
That's funny.
2-year-olds, what can you do?
I know.
That's so funny.
Well, thanks so much, Dan, for joining us. If you would like to learn more and dive deeper into some of his content that he has his own podcast, and it's Get Your Marriage On podcast, and that can be found anywhere you listen to podcasts. He also has his online website, getyourmarriageon.com, and there you can find all the different apps. So he mentioned Intimately Us, Just Between Us, The Anatomy of Marriage are just a couple of the apps that you can find in the app store. And there's links for the podcast, links for his blog and couples retreat. So we'll be sure to add that to our show notes. But Dan, thanks so much for being vulnerable, for sharing your story, and for talking and sharing so much insight into this amazing topic that we know will benefit a lot of people. So thanks again.
Thank you very much.